Intervju Radija Študent.
Pozdravljeni v Ereš intervjuju, to je intro v tale intervju z zasedbo Sons oziroma z njenim vodjem Michaelom Žirajem, No Words, No Thoughts, z njihove nove plošče. Njujorška skupina, ki jo je leta 82 ustanovil multiinstrumentalist in vokalist, že omenjeni Michael Žira, je na tistih, o katerih vlada nesporni konsens, da jo je zares mogoče doživeti šele na njenih intenzivnih živih nastopih. Ljubljansko občinstvo je imelo to priložnost že večkrat, če naši podatki držijo, je tukaj gostovala petkrat, morda najodmevneje na Novem roku v Križankah leta 1987. Njenega vodjo pa smo pred slabimi šestimi leti v Cankarjevem domu poslušali tudi zasedbo Angels of Light, s katero je najbolj zaznamoval obdobje zadnjih 13 let, ko se je zdelo, da je obdobja Swans zavedno konec. Toda Michael Žira je ponovno presenetil in zasedbo lani reaktiviral, ter z novo postavo posnel album My Father Will Guide Me Up the Rope to the Sky. V okviru obsežne svetovne turneje se Swans nocoj ustavljajo v kinu Šiška, kjer smo se z Michaelom Žirajem popodne tudi pogovarjali.
Yeah, how this did this live performances meet your personal expectations when you decided to
The live performances we were far exceeding what I would have thought possible. Swans has become a very complete experience. It's not really like a rock show. So more intense in many ways. The band is, I have a great bunch of musicians. This is the best version of Swans I've ever had.
But is there any major difference between this tour and the tours that you had with Swans?
In the past?
In the past, yeah.
Yes. And this music is sort of more all-enveloping and physically more powerful, I guess. The songs are certainly longer. There's some songs that are 30 minutes long. Not songs, I wouldn't even call them songs. There's some sound experiences that last 30 minutes. And it has a lot of hills and valleys, so it's sort of orchestral in that way, in the dynamics it has. And we push ourselves and our audience to the limit. It's kind of a religious thing, in a non-religious way.
I wanted to ask you this because I've read in one interview where you were describing your tours in Eastern Europe in the 80s, mm-hmm. From the technical point of view, that sometimes it was not what you've been used elsewhere, so you had to adapt.
That's fine,
your concert.
That was fine.
So it was a kind of element of improvisation maybe included in the music. So I'm interested if there is a similar element of improvisation present now, or is it the whole show so
the show is a constantly evolving thing. Every night something new develops. The songs themselves started out, well, shorter for one thing. But they've transmuted and transformed. I always look for change. And there is a lot of improvisation, but not in the usual jazz sense of the word. It's more like following the sound, finding where the sound that you're creating leads you, rather than the other way around, or rather than trying to express some idiosyncratic signature as a musician. It's more like trying to create the sound.
So even if the set list is more or less fixed,
it's open.
Oh,
it's mm-hmm. like a piece of theater that's changing all the time. Mm-hmm. There's another group that's that through two entirely different means, but I'm very fond of them, and they have the kind of the same approach to making music, and that's this group, The Necks. Have you heard of them?
Yeah, they've been here as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, they're just so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We just played with them in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. I think they're tremendous. Mm-hmm. Now they improvise from the beginning of the performance they make, but it's still the approach of like finding this resonance,
To build.
That's what I love about them mm-hmm. and us.
Okay, you've explained many times why you decided to reanimate Swans, and we could say it was an artistic urge, but still. Despite the fact that you've been trying to move away from what you've been doing with Angels of Light, did they influence Swans, what
you're
doing now?
Mm-hmm. Particularly on this first Swans record, the new one, My Father Will Guide Me Up a Rope to the Sky, there's a lot of Angels of Light elements in that. I would look at that record as a transitional record from Angels of Light into Swans. Now we're working on, we have lots of new material in the set that's been written for another album, but actually just for performances. And that will be part of a new album we're going to start recording in July. And that's more specifically Swans now. It's largely instrumental with some, I guess, fairly pointed vocals in them. But that's this group of players contributing and making this kind of massive experience.
That's what I wanted to ask you. The role of the certain members of this new group.
Everyone I work with is very important, but this group of people is the most empathetic group I've ever had. They seem to be communicating really well, musically and otherwise. And the role is that I'll have a song idea, I'll have a rhythm. And they'll start responding to it in a rehearsal, or I'll direct them, and then it'll inevitably change, and maybe they'll do something I like or don't like, and I just kind of guide the process, but with their input. So it's a collaboration, but I'm like the film director, sort of like that.
Mm-hmm. You said once that a certain level of discomfort is needed for a creative process. So is this true just when you start to work on a song yourself, or is it true also for work in group? Because I'm interested in how does this affect on relationship.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you have to constantly push yourself into unfamiliar places. Otherwise, you become, well, a parody or a cartoon. That's very hard to do. It's a break habits, you know. So that's a good point, though. Mm-hmm. Just made me think of something in a song that we're working on that I need to change.
Yeah, okay. You were mentioning your new record, Your Father Will Guide Me Up a Rope to the Sky, and I would like to ask you about the song You Fucking People Make Me Sick, which was made with your daughter and Devendra Banhart. And it's, for me, one of the most beautiful on that album. And I was curious, how did it come to that cooperation?
It has the most unpredictable origin of any of the songs, by accident, really, by following accidents. There was a little bits of sound on noises, mistakes left over from other recordings on the record, and I gathered those in Pro Tools and started to make a collage out of those. And it was sounding okay, but it seemed a little predictable and just like another sound collage by someone. And so I started adding acoustic instruments to it and making it into more of a little piece of a film soundtrack. And that was sounding okay, but then I realized it needed a vocal. And so I went home and I was playing my acoustic guitar. I was sort of absentmindedly looking at these hipster websites for music, you know. It's like, oh, look what this one's doing. They have a new record. Or, oh, look at that girl with the foxy breasts, you know, whatever. Just looking at their little hipster world. And these words started coming out from the point of view of like a stalker or a serial killer. So I just wrote about, like, from that point of view of looking at these fashionable young people, you know, basically wanting to murder them and rape them, male and female alike, just to be fair. So I was singing, and I had these words, and I realized I was singing, like, nah, 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 kind of high as I can go. I can't go very high now because I'm on tour. And I realized I sounded like my friend Devendra. So I thought, well, this is much better if I just get Devendra to sing it. So he sang it. So I had Devendra sing it. And then it didn't seem complete, so I my daughter was singing in the other room, and I heard her, and so I just gave her the words, and my wife coached her, and she sang along with her. And then that's how it developed.
Uh-huh. Okay. Just another question about another song on the last record, Jim, which is allegedly devoted to Jim Thirlwell. Is
sure.
That true? Uh-huh. Is there another story behind
that's just
it?
An homage to
okay.
Jim.
Okay.
I was, in the last couple of years, going through a very bad time mentally. Not sure I want to continue. And I met up with Jim again by some circumstance and saw that he had created a really strong body of work recently. And also he gave me a compilation of his early tape experiments, which are really fantastic. And to me, it was very inspirational, because I know that he went through a very bad time recently. And now he travels around with an orchestra, and he composes music for an orchestra. And under Steroid Maximus, it's just amazing, really fantastic. And it was just kind of inspirational. So I wrote this song just based on, loosely really, based on memories of my time with Jim when we were close in the 80s. We're still friends, we just don't see each other much, but okay. Just as an homage to him.
Okay. I was mentioning before this artistical urge to make new music, but I'm also curious about economical view of making Swans alive again. Because since the record sales decreased so much, live concerts were and still are a source of income.
It's sort of the last source. I mean, but you travel with your own record store now,
yeah,
which is the merch table.
That's the
last independent record store in the world is the merch table at the concert. Oh yeah, it is important. I have to make a living.
But it's also decreasing.
That is decreasing also. It's decreasing because since no one's making money at selling records, everyone has to tour. And so since everyone's touring,
it's too much.
There's too many options.
Yeah.
And so not as many people go to each show. And so then the guarantees come down. And so it's really kind of a hopeless situation. Created by this terrible little piece of technology.
Yeah, so this is the direct consequence also on
of stealing music is making music harder and harder to be possible to make.
Yeah. Do you see any possible?
I don't know. I just keep clawing away like I always have my whole life. I've never had an easy life, so I'm not scared. I mean, I have a couple of children now, so that worries me. But it is a really bad situation.
So you can't really support younger acts so much as
no.
You
I stopped the label because of that.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I still put out a few things here and there, but as far as finding a young person, an artist, and helping build their career, like I've done with several people now through Young God Records, I can't do that anymore because not enough people buy the music now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. On the present tour, you mainly play new material, as you've said yourself.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's two and a half songs from the recent
property.
Record, then new material that's not recorded yet, and then one swan song from the past.
I crawled.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you did play your property as well.
We started to, yeah.
Yeah.
But as the other songs have grown, we've cut the number of songs, because now the set is about 2.5 hours.
Yeah. So it's made, you choose that one because of musical.
I'm able to sing it and feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
It's a really the lyric is kind of important to me. In that it was inspired by reading this Wilhelm Reich book, The Mass Psychology of Fascism, which was about sort of comparing Hitler and Stalin and their role as father, and how that role comes down. First to like the state and then down to the family as a way of indoctrinating people with the idea of obedience, obedience to something bigger than themselves, particularly a paternal figure. And so I wrote this kind of sexualized song at the time as using in my mind the idea of Ronald Reagan being my father, because he used the same kind of idea, and they always hark back to a time when America was greater, or when Germany was greater, or Russia as the motherland, and it's always like an idea of nostalgia and place that the father needs to fix and supply, So so I like those words, and they're also very sexual and intense at the same time. So I can get into singing them.
Because I was also thinking for your property that it has its value, although it's.
Yeah, that's okay, but we were playing that and it started to seem kind of predictable, so we stopped.
Mm-hmm. So I would still say that maybe when people go to the concert, maybe they don't hear the lyrics because they are overwhelmed by sound, but still.
Know. Yeah, they're there, I mean.
But still, it's, part of.
I have to sing it, though, so.
Sure. So there is this kind of political engagement, which is not maybe so direct, but it's present somehow.
I don't know about political.
Or social, let's say.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not saying that it's direct. But,
no, a lot of my songs deal with, consumerism and...
That's in this way, I'm
mass media sort of occupying our minds and creating our desires and... Mm-hmm. Trying to find an authentic voice inside that somehow. But I don't really think of it as political. It's more just about what it means to be a thinking, breathing person now in this world we live in, which is not just the physical world, it's the whole media experience.
Yeah, because I thought in this context of what's happening in popular music nowadays and in this indie scene, for example. And
it's nothing.
Sure, and if I compare you, if I put your new record into this context, it still has some, I think, greater impact. And I wanted to ask you if you think that it's time that something bigger and more maybe radical happens on musical level.
Well, that's not my place to say, but yeah, sure. I you know, when I respond to something musically, it's usually because someone has a powerful, authentic voice. And I don't mean just voice, vocal. I mean their vision, you know? And that's what I respond to, not so much the social, political context, but just that they're really speaking to me, you know, directly, and that it's obviously urgent and necessary, then I respond to it. But the kind of fashionable pop music that, you know, is like indie, maybe it's a little challenging, but it's still, you know, really about fancy, about clothing and about, you know, it's about a scene, being cool and all that. It's just like, ugh, I never, we Swans never was part of anything like that anyway, even when we were young, so.
Okay, so we can expect new albums.
Oh yeah, yeah, we're working on one, like I say, we start in July, and it will be done by November probably, and then released in April, May next year,
okay.
And then we'll tour.
Okay.
We're gonna do a 30th anniversary Swans tour, and I think we're gonna do, we're talking, we haven't set it in stone yet, with our friends in Neurosis and Sun, of doing like this 3-day festival thing that travels around the world, and we'll curate more arty bands too. I don't want it to be like a metal or heavy thing. So it would be like a traveling festival thing for the 30th anniversary of Swans.
Okay, we're looking forward. Thank you.
Thanks.
To je bil intervju z Michaelom Žirajem, vodjo zasedbe Swans, ki bo nocoj zatresla kino Šiško. Povemo še to, da bo namesto prvotno napovedanega predvozača kitarista Jamesa Blackshawa, varovanca Žirajeve Young God Records, za ogrevanje poskrbel kar Christoph Hahn, kitarist sedanje postave Swans in ustanovitelj benda Les Hommes Sauvages. Opozorimo pa še na to, da vstopnica tudi danes stane 22 evrov in ne 25, kakor je bilo sprva napovedano. Intervju sem opravila Polona Pobržnik, za konec pa poslušajmo še skladbo You Fucking People Make Me Sick in Swans. Se vidimo v Šiški.
Intervju Radija Študent.